I guess the last 2 years, one of the areas I've gotten the most complaints has been in our mail program because of what Senator Ripper was talking about, only on a broader basis. Agencies saying, why does it take 6 or 7 days for the letter to get there when we are expecting a 1 or 2 day at most? Now, some mail, it doesn't make any difference whether it's 2 days or 6 days, but there's a great amount of mail, bank deposits, different certified actions that are required by an agency for somebody to take. Those require quick turnaround. We have just, I think about 2 months ago, substantially reorganized our mail routes. We reduced the number of routes. We reduced the number of drops in some instances. We increased the number of drops in some other instances. And we went to the split shifting approach because that was the only way that we could see that we could handle these increasing volumes, which we have not been budgeted in terms of manpower to handle. But I can say to you now, I really do think the changes that Wanda has made are allowing us to handle the current mail system, current mail volumes, using 1 or 2 day turnaround as our standard time. So I think we're handling it now without any additional manpower. But there's going to be a breaking point here if the mail continues to grow, at which we simply cannot continue to absorb workload increases without additional manpower. The supervisor, the working supervisor, we're using the title supervisor because of collective bargaining purposes. This is going to be a lead worker, in essence, in the mail room, doing day-to-day supervising of the staff as they come in and as they go out, doing some sorting. It's actually a working supervisor, as well as taking over relief responsibilities for when we have somebody out sick. I really think that that also is a very important position because of these volumes that we're handling and the realization that we're saving millions of dollars. If we don't move the mails, we're going to see state agencies starting to put postage on interagency mail. And I can give you half a dozen examples right now of agencies that were using U.S. mails for interagency activity before we went to our reorganization that Wanda has implemented. So if they can't get us to move the mails, they're going to move it themselves, and it's going to cost state government more money. I really think we've got to stay on top of this one because of the money that we can save. Lastly, I wanted to talk about our fleet operations, where most of the real new money is in this budget. I think this budget goes up about 50%. And it deals with the satellite motor pools, the transfer in of agencies, and the expansion of the fleet. There are no hard dollars in our budget for this activity. This is one of those that I was telling you in the earlier briefing that we respond to agency demands. There's no money out there assessed to the state agencies that are controlled by General Services. There's no hard dollars in General Services budget. We would get this money only if the agencies elected to use our services. If they don't elect to use our services, we don't get this money. In my judgment, all three of these activities do not relate to a cost increase for state government. They relate to a transfer of activity from some other source to using General Services. For instance, on the satellite motor pools, as Steve talked earlier and Senator Ripper did last week, if we can get the agencies out of a single occupant car going to Medford and get them on a bus or an airline, and then have a car down there that they can drive around in Medford and then come back, we save in two areas. First of all, we save in time for the person who's traveled down there to be able to do some other work, and they get down there faster and they get back. People can actually go to Pendleton and back in one day if we will get them to use the airline or the train. Secondly, we save in terms of reduced fuel. A few years ago, when fuel was not so expensive, it really was not all that economical to use the common carriers. But with the price of fuel doubling, and we were budgeted, I think, 69 cents for the current biennium, 69 cents a gallon for fuel, and it's already $1.20 a gallon for fuel, so it's almost doubled for us. It is becoming economical to use the common carrier if you have one person in a car. If you have four or five, it's really more economical to use that car. But most business is conducted by a single occupant or a single individual going to do something. They don't have a mate that goes along with them. The transfer in of agency vehicles, those exist out in agencies today. They're spending the money out there today, and we have documented that it is more cost effective for us to use that car than it is for the agencies to have them out there under their own ownership. Because when they're sitting idle at the agency, if we have them in our motor pools, we can assign them out to some other agency. There has been no significant expansion of the fleet in general services for several biennium, excepting transferring in agency vehicles, where we have taken over their vehicles and gotten more efficient utilization of those vehicles. So that's not a new expense. The 50 new vehicles that we'd like to ask you to approve, this is really an oddity at a time when we're cutting mileage, and it's difficult for me to make the case to you that we need these 50 additional vehicles because of the drop in mileage statewide. But the point that I want to make to you is that if we don't have the vehicles in general services to respond to the agency's request, they're going to use the private car mileage. And if you were to add up the private car mileage that state government uses today, I would hazard a guess that out of all the miles driven on official state business, at least 25% is private car mileage. And I'll bet it's greater than that. But that we know of, it's at least 25% at 17 cents a mile. We need to move the employee out of his own car, we need to move him into a state car, and we need to move him into a pool car, not a car that sits idle one thing at a time at some agency location. None of these result in increased cost to state government. They all result in reorganizing the cost of government into what we think is really a more cost-effective approach. I guess the last thing that I would say is that the services division is one of the two budgets that has the biggest increases. This and the risk management division, in terms of raw dollars, has among the biggest increase. So those are primarily why we've got those increases in there. With that, we're done presenting the services division, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I might ask one, just going through my mind real quick. Like, and I should know it, but those cars that you have, you get in wrecks and you have to repair. Do you do that, or how does the insurance work on them?
Insurance?
Yes.
Well, we insure vehicles ourselves through a self-insurance program.
But then those repair jobs, that do you let any of them out of contract, or do you?
All the body work goes out of contract.
Any
major accident will go to a private vendor. We will do engine repairs short of rebuilding an engine.
Okay, I see. Then you have to get a bid on those, or how do you do it? Say I smacked this car up today and got two fenders knocked off of it. How do you do that? How do you get a price on it right away, quick or something, is what I was interested in.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we submit the bid out to three providers of that service. And just as in normal insurance activities, before they required you do that with your own private insurance, we still do it here. We get at least three bids, and then we go with a low bid.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions?
Yes. Yeah. An example of the agency-owned automobiles, Firehead.
Highway.
They listed in the numbers under Eugene as far as average number of vehicles. That's no. Separate.
These would only be our vehicles that we own. We own roughly 2,000 vehicles in our motor pools. But that 2,000, I would hazard a guess, probably is one-third of the total vehicles owned by state government. Highway and Higher Ed both have major motor pools that they operate, and those are probably cost-effective motor pools. But it's the other agencies that we're addressing, AFS, employment, CSD, workers' comp, revenue. Over the years, agencies, when general services, this is one of the things I was saying earlier to you, when general services can't do it, the agencies will go do it themselves. And over the years, a lot of agencies have gone out and bought vehicles. I can remember when welfare bought about 80 vehicles because they could not get assigned vehicles from general services.
Who makes that determination, whether or not they purchase them for their own use or whether they go into them?
Well, it's the agency will generally ask services division can you handle our volume of activity? And if services says no, then the agency will just go out and buy the car themselves if they have the budget funding. We have a procedure in place where when an agency comes into the purchasing division and asks us to buy a vehicle for them, purchasing will send that to the services division first. And the services division will have an opportunity to say back to the agency, we can respond to your request in whatever locality it is. And so we don't want you to buy that vehicle, and we can stop them from buying the vehicle if we can respond to their need. So we can prevent them from end running us, but our problem has been we have not had the units to respond to the request.
Couldn't take over the cars that they bought and manage them.
We are.
Is there pride of ownership for that old Pinto out there?
Well, we have one package in here where we actually would take over vehicles from the state agency, but we have to buy them. They can't give it to this. Most of these programs have federal or dedicated funds in their budgets, which makes or gives them an equity, gives the federal or dedicated funding source an equity in that vehicle. For us to take the vehicle over, we have to buy the equity out.
Is that a good system?
Well, it'd be better if we just bought the vehicles ourselves to begin with rather than having to buy up the equity after the fact. But there are so many cars out there now that we don't have any alternative if we want to get rid of those but to buy them out. And we have done this slowly for I think, what, three biennium, Frank? There was actually, 100 cars or 150 cars that we were supposed to buy from agencies this biennium. And I ordered that terminated because of the price increase in fuel. We could not afford the price of fuel. We should probably have been to the emergency board to ask for additional funding because the fuel prices went from 69 cents to over $1.20. But when Wanda and I saw that we were going to go over our budget, we had a choice of either coming to the emergency board or aborting vehicle purchases. And so I elected to abort the vehicle purchases. We not only did not buy the cars that were supposed to transfer in according to legislative approval from the agencies to us, but we're not buying any vehicle replacements this year. We have cars that are going to go past 80,000 miles, but we're not going to replace them because we have aborted our entire vehicle replacement policy for the second year of the biennium. And that is another reason why you find in the original budget we had so many new vehicles to be purchased for replacement because we didn't buy enough this year. But we were able to scale that down because the mileage has been dropping. So it gets washed out pretty well.
I guess I'm having trouble following how you would, an agency would request that you, they're thinking about purchasing their own automobiles, and you say that you can't service them, so then they go ahead and purchase their own automobiles. But yet I understood you to say that it's better to have them in a motor pool rather than to have them sit two-thirds of the time in front of the agency. Now, somehow or other, those two statements don't add up to me, and I wish you'd back and go through that once more.
It is better to have them in a motor pool.
Yeah.
But when Wanda does not have the legislative authorization in terms of expenditure authority to buy fuel and to buy the car, then she has to say no. And she lets the agency go out and buy their own vehicle. And they pay for the vehicle, and they pay for the fuel, and they pay for the mechanical operation. And that is more cost effective than if it were in a pool. But we, because you have a limitation on us, we cannot respond to that request if it exceeds our budget.
But when they respond to them, then you say they sit there two-thirds of the time.
Well, not two-thirds, but they may sit there anywhere from 10 to 20 or 30% of the time. At the agency's location.
So instead of, looks like you, instead of buying a certain number of automobiles, if you bought two-thirds less, maybe they could use them all the time. You know, I don't think that adds up.
They're not worrying about him. They want their own. He's not giving you all of the story. There is the prestige sort of thing and all the other baloney that you get around here, that by God, I'm going to have my car. And I'm the manager, and I'm going to have one, and I'm going to drive back and forth to work, and it isn't going to have one that's all beat up or all the rest of it. He might only put 6,000 or 8,000 miles on it a year, but it's he's operating welfare, and he's got the half of the money's going to come from the feds, and he's going to have his own. And he has that right to go out and use agency money to buy it if he wants to do it. Which reminds me, do you have any, if I might go one step further, do you know how many unmarked vehicles, by that I mean how many who do not have state agency licenses, or do you have a policy that you force all of them? Because I still see some around. What is the policy on having a car that doesn't have the E on it? You know?
They're all supposed to be, well, okay, they're two different things. There are E plates and there are state seals.
Yeah.
They're all supposed to have state seals on them, some state identification on them, unless they receive our approval in advance to not be identified. And the current policy is that you have an identified vehicle unless you have some function that requires you to be unmarked. Police investigators, state police undercover agents, AFS investigators, some parole officers, some of these people that have to be around. And then there are some agency heads that have unmarked cars.
Yeah, and agency heads too.
They are not sealed. They are not sealed. They
are
not
E-plates.
Well, they are E-plates. The only people that do not have E-plates, as I recall, are undercover agents. Isn't that right?
Criminal investigators.
Well, you can go to AFS and see all of this. Do we still believe in, or do we still allow all these people who are supposed to be Children's Services and all the rest of them to have unmarked cars?
If they are investigators, we are.
Well, they're not. Well, every one of them is an investigator. It really always kind of bothers me to see welfare cars and using the excuse that you might, you know, the neighbor might see that here's the 17-year-old punk that just beat up on some old woman, and we're not supposed to let the neighbor know that we're there investigating. I just think it's ridiculous. I really think those are the people that ought to have marked cars. I guess I'm letting some of my anger come out, but to me it's absolutely asinine that we allow this to happen. And right now they have, there isn't a single one that are marked that I'm aware of out of that outfit, because everybody's an investigator. How do we get a whole handle on that?
Well,
I'm speaking now from our point.
Yes, it is a policy that we administer in General Services. And if you want us to tighten up on that policy, you would do so by giving us that kind of policy direction. A budget note, or you could pass a statute, however you want to convey it to us, that you want unmarked vehicles to be authorized only for whatever you determine to be an appropriate function. We have tightened up in the last 5 or 6 years, but there are still a fair number of vehicles that are unmarked.
My one that I'm always grabbing at all the time is state police, but I can understand why they need an unmarked vehicle, as long as it's not out there issuing a ticket. I really resent the unmarked vehicle stopping people on the road. In fact, I would, I have said this publicly, that if any woman ever gets raped or anything by that process that they're using with that blue light, I'm going to personally attack at a point that say that we ought to sue the state of Oregon for that very thing, because we're inviting the criminal to get a little blue light at the 15-cent store and put it on his dashboard and not have a license. And I see their cars out there, and that bothers me, because I think that you're setting up a whole pattern for the I-5 type bandit, you know, and I think it's wrong. Nobody should ever have to stop. In fact, I might just put a bill in that nobody should ever have to stop for an unmarked car. I really mean it, because this is getting to be growing. The other part is about parole officers and juveniles, and, you know, our crime rates going sky high, and I don't think this has helped one little bit. I think some of the neighbors ought to know that this kid's in trouble because his name's not in the paper, and he just continually goes around, and so maybe they ought to have that car out there saying, the state police are there to check, or the county police, or someone else, maybe to be a little more. I don't know how to get at it, but if that's the way we get at it, I'm going to try and do it, because I think it's wrong what we're doing now.
Well, the unmarked cars we have on the state police system, they have an E plate on them, though, don't they?
No.
They have an E plate unless they're undercover.
The radar ones do not even have an E plate. They're sitting alongside the road.
In other words, you know, coming back and forth on the freeway the other day, I see an unmarked state police car. had somebody stopped, and I couldn't see anything on that to show that was a state police car.
There isn't anything on it, Matt, and they put a blue light up on their dashboard, and I just think it's really wrong that anybody should have to stop for it, because I especially think about women, and this is, you know, the crime rate right now is growing so fast. Listening to them last night in California, that there's 10 murders a day in California.
I could be wrong, but I thought the only police vehicles, state police vehicles, that did not have an E-plate were undercover vehicles.
Well, you want to ride along the freeway with me? I travel that freeway so much.
Well, I didn't know. I noticed one, and that's the reason I brought it up, Jack. Okay.
But I worry more about the other. The other question I want to ask before we leave, because we're just about ready. Is there any, the word processors and the mail increase, do we have any correlation between these? Has your mail rate doubled since we started doing that, or is there any kind of a figure? You were talking about how much the mail's increased. Have you looked at that to see when we put a word processor in, do we also get a double mail rate?
I'm sorry, I don't have any statistics on that myself, and I'm not sure whether that is the case or not. The word processors, from what we've heard, have facilitated the ability for various agencies to dispense information, but I don't know
about 500 letters in a couple hours.
I have all of my check for mail, post office basis. There are an awful, and of course some of that then is forwarded. I had one prime example here a month ago, and we did mention it when we were going through the executive department's budget. I had a package mail from an agency that contained a book that went to Baker, and then they mailed it back. Postage due, it was 91 cents. That went out to all legislators. We've been here down here for 3 months. There's something wrong. I think the executive department did send out a directive. But I would bet that I have got a bushel box full of mail from FedEx and others, but they don't forward it. I might just send and get it just for an example, but I would guess if that's true. I got after one agency during the interim when I was down for an emergency order, a new agency, and I suppose maybe that's some problem there, but I was getting, during the interim, mail that didn't amount to anything. There was no information in there was vital to anyone. At least one letter a day every week, and you just open it up and it was nothing, and just ground fire. And no information was good for anybody. And when I came down to an e-board meeting, I met the director of that particular agency in the hall. I told him, he mailed me another letter. That was going to be it, It did drop off some, but I'm sure, and I don't know how your department, or if you would have any control, you can't control an agency if they want to send out ridiculous mail to, and I suppose not just because of a representative, but I suppose they were mailing that out to everybody they had an address for, which is just totally useless,
There's a wide divergence of opinion among agency directors on what to mail to legislators or to the public. And you're right, I don't think that the Services Division can control it. If an agency head demands that it be sent in the mail, we're really not going to be able to refuse it. But there's a wide variance among agency directors. Some agency directors will mail everything they do to legislators or to any constituent group that exists.
Yeah.
I don't happen to share that. You've probably only gotten one letter from me in the 2 years I've been in General Services.
Yes.
And the the basis that many of the newer directors are operating on is that if the legislator has an interest, they'll contact you. Or if you know you've got a hot potato in their community that they ought to be aware of, you can send them a special letter. But this old business of sending, of doing annual reports on everything and then sending 9,000 copies out is slowly slipping away, and it's good that it is, because it's a terrible waste of money.
If we're talking about it, as Senator Ripper discovered a while ago with his pencil over there, how much money, and I don't think there's any difference during the interim. It just keeps right on going. There must be some way to get some kind of a...
Our little figure just come out, what we know about, just a little over $20 million a year for mail. And we don't know about all of it. That doesn't give us just imagine what it must be.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, Max, you can get at that under services and supplies.
Yeah.
I probably should also have mentioned to you that we're looking very seriously at contracting for a pre-sorting service, which is something we'll do in the next couple of weeks probably. The new bulk rate that the Postal Service has, they've had it for some time, but it's a pre-sort bulk rate is even going up. Will save you money if you do pre-sorting. Now, we don't have the staff in General Services to do the pre-sorting, so we're looking very seriously at contracting with a firm to do pre-sorting for the state.
Is that just by zip code?
Yeah.
Just like you were going to send bulk rate?
Yeah. And you can get a reduced rate for that if you take it to the post office already pre-sorted. Now, a contractor is going to cost us more money than if we had state employees, but we don't have the staff right now, so we're going to put it out to contractors. Pretty seriously looking at it.
Steve, do you have any?
Not at this time, Mr. Chairman, given the time constraints.
Okay. I think then what do we do? Let's see, we won't be on this tomorrow.
Well, the next time we'll meet will be Friday, pending full ways and means.
Well, there won't be any full ways, because they're all going to be gone this week. I would rather doubt
some probably
be full ways than we'll report from the executive.
Okay.
On Friday, the consultant that worked with the agency and the tort liability and risk management will be here. We'll take whatever time the subcommittee wants to spend with them. And then in addition to that, we'll go ahead and take Gene and the rest of the risk management.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, have we drafted them? Did we ever order drafted a bill that would speak to the tort liability for the circuit district judges and the district attorneys?
The bill has been drafted, and Kay has it.
Yeah.
I think she's just sort of waiting for appropriate time.
Yeah, okay. Well, we had a special order of business at one time when we were hearing that court budget.
Okay. With that, then we'll do